The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents. Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It's Friday, finally, September 17th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. And unfortunately, not joining me today, once again, the pirate Ganja John. Unfortunately, Ganja John is still recovering from his hospital stay and the literal pain in his neck that he had. So get well soon, Ganja John. We're looking forward to having you here again. But of course, we have another person in our studio who's just barely made it to the virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon. My good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ.
Oh man, having to reach across the board and turn things on, turn things off. It's tough without you guys. Yeah. I missed you.
You're doing a great job though. Did you hit record today?
I've got record going right now.
Nice.
But I hope you're feeling a little bit better today.
You know, I'm pretty puny feeling still, and I'm a terrible, terrible sick person. I know that we have real sick people that listen all the time, and I don't know how they do it. I guess you just do it, but I am the worst sick person in the world. I got no sleep last night because I was so busy whining all night. And when my boyfriend wouldn't listen to me anymore, I called one of my girlfriends to whine about being sick. So
did they call the whambulance for you?
No, but they should have.
Yeah. All right. Well, Carrie brings us our headlines right after the first break. So what's in the news today, Carrie?
Today we're going to go over an Australian research that's currently underway down under. And also we're going to talk about, unfortunately, raids. I have two separate raids on stories. You know, those Las Vegas dispensaries were raided last week during the convention. We didn't get time to cover them. You talked about them a little bit yesterday. We're going to talk about that a little bit more today. And another raid that happened this week in another medical marijuana state.
Okay, Las Vegas raids, more raids. So much for that promise by Attorney General Eric Holder. Apparently the goal here is to just not publicize the raids, but they're continuing on with the raids nonetheless. Thanks, Carrie. We'll get right to that after this first break. Also want to remind everybody that tomorrow is the Boston Freedom Rally on Boston Common, tomorrow at high noon Eastern Time. You got to get out there for Boston Freedom Rally. It's not like Seattle Hemp Fest or some of these other hemp fests where it's a two-day, all-day kind of thing. It's noon to 6 p.m., and when 6 p.m. hits, man, they clean that place out. So get down there to the Boston Common, the cradle of our liberty, and celebrate our hemp heritage. It's decriminalized in Massachusetts now. Should be a whole lot of fun. I'm Radical Russ. We're right back after these short messages with your hemp headlines. Coming up also, your daily toker tunes, rock and Friday music from Cannabis Dream, and news on Prop 19 and Measure 74 at the bottom of the hour.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American substances, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly. If I said some silly thing, then that's the reason why.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Researchers in Australia at the University of New South Wales have launched a study to try and better understand cannabis withdrawal. The research is being done to help cannabis users to kick their habit. The lead researcher, Dr. Melissa Norbert, from the university's National Cannabis Prevention and Intervention Center, is hoping the study will lead to a pharmacological substitute to give to people who are trying to stop their cannabis use. Dr. Norbert told an ABC News outlet last week, quote, "Because people don't die from cannabis withdrawal and it doesn't seem as horrible as withdrawing from heroin, therefore people have ignored it," unquote. She points to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, a manual used by many worldwide in addiction treatment therapies that lists withdrawal symptoms for other drugs like cocaine and opiates, and notes that the entry for cannabis does not list any recognized medical syndrome for people who give up their cannabis use. In her current study, Dr. Norberg has participants smoke marijuana as normal for 7 days, and then they have to give it up for 2 weeks and keep a daily diary. So far, she is claiming her study has found that withdrawal symptoms kick in within 24 hours, and the most common symptoms are weight loss, headaches, mood changes, feeling depressed, and feeling anxious. She says that 200,000 Australians depend on cannabis daily. She says that most will go back to cannabis use to alleviate the adverse feelings of not having it, or turn to nicotine and alcohol instead, contributing to further drug use. The study will continue for another month, and then the results will be analyzed and published. Now, again, the purpose of this study is to develop a pharmacological substitute to help people quit a cannabis habit.
Yeah. So, if you're smoking too much weed, we're going to come up with a pill for you to help out. This is a solution in search of a problem, if you ask me. First of all, the notion that withdrawal from cannabis is something that you need a pill to treat is ridiculous. First of all, there's a lot of question as to whether or not this withdrawal from cannabis is even that serious a situation in the first place, or if the person is just going back to the symptoms they had before they started using the cannabis. I mean, check out the symptoms they list here. Anxiety, sleeplessness, headaches, depression. You know what's really good for anxiety? Marijuana. You know what's good for sleeplessness? Marijuana. You know what's good for headaches? Marijuana. You know what's good for depression? Marijuana. So could it be the people that are feeling these withdrawal symptoms aren't feeling withdrawal? They're just feeling what they had before they started taking marijuana to treat that symptom. Right? They're just going back to the state they normally were in. Now, if someone has a problem with cannabis and they're using too much of it and it's causing a problem in their life, I don't want to make light of that. But the reason why the DSM-4 goes into such detail about the withdrawal from alcohol and heroin and cocaine and all these, you know, OxyContin and so on, is because those withdrawals are serious and they can seriously injure or kill you. You can die from the withdrawals from heroin. You can die from the withdrawals from alcohol. That's not going to happen with cannabis. Really, what needs to happen here is the people who are having problems withdrawing from cannabis just need to tough up a little bit here and just say no. If that's what you want to go with, if you don't want to smoke cannabis anymore, don't. But don't try to blame the cannabis for you not being able to stop. It's not a physical withdrawal symptom here. You're having a psychological withdrawal. It's time to find something else to do, something else to occupy your mind. But the notion that we want to come up with a pill to treat that, I can only imagine what kind of pill they'd try to come up with to treat that. And I'd bet you the side effects from that pill would be far worse than the withdrawals that you'd have from the cannabis in the first place.
A medical marijuana dispensary in Spokane, Washington was raided this week. Paul Ellis, the owner and operator of a medical marijuana dispensary called MedMar Dis, first pushed the envelope when he decided to locate his new business across the street from a state patrol office. Washington State's medical marijuana law, by most people's interpretation, prohibits dispensaries. Mr. Ellis, who is a medical marijuana patient, said he decided to open his own dispensary after being sickened by marijuana from another dispensary in town. He says he doesn't think that the other dispensary knowingly gave him cannabis that made him sick, but he wanted to do it better to assure patients' health. According to the warrant, Ellis asked Washington State Patrol Sergeant Dave Bolton last spring if he could use their state labs to test his marijuana for contaminants. Well, the police were already well aware of the business that he had been running and had been monitoring the activity since last December, but sheriff officials said prosecutors were waiting for the resolution of criminal charges brought against two other dispensary owners in Spokane last year. The Spokane County Sheriff's Detective finally served a search warrant and raided his dispensary on September 2nd. According to the Spokane County Sheriff's Office, anywhere between 179 and 243 marijuana plants were taken that day. There were at least four different numbers listed among the paperwork. Some freshly harvested cannabis, some cash, a digital scale, and customer receipts. Court documents say that Ellis cooperated with detectives, gave them a tour, and informed them that he supplied 200 customers and averaged $200 to $500 a day in sales. He also invited the police to his home to see his marijuana crop. This case may force the courts to better interpret the law when it comes to dispensing of medical cannabis in their state. A person holding a medical marijuana care card in or a caregiver in Washington can grow 15 plants for either the patient or themselves. On the other hand, there are people who believe under the current law there is no limit to the amount of patients a caregiver can serve. County Deputy Prosecutor John Grasso has come out publicly and said he believes the law does, in fact, prohibit dispensaries. Detectives have forwarded Ellis's case to Spokane County Prosecutor this week for review, and depending on the outcome of that review, Ellis could face criminal charges. In the meantime, there is a closed for business sign outside of the MedMar Dis in Spokane Valley, and the owners of the dispensaries raided last summer, the one that officers were waiting to find out the outcome before they went after Ellis, will finally get their day in court. Scott Shoup and Christopher Stevens, who were arrested in September of 2009, will be in court on September 27th to answer to charges of felony distribution of a controlled substance.
Okay, this is a kind of the natural occurrence, the natural result of the medical marijuana states, especially the early adopters of medical marijuana like Oregon, Washington, Alaska, and so on, coming up with a system where people are allowed to use medical marijuana, people are allowed to grow medical marijuana, but there's no reliable supply system for buying or selling medical marijuana. And believe me, I've looked over the Washington law a whole bunch, and I don't see anything in the Washington law that allows for dispensaries. There's nothing in there that specifically says you can't have a dispensary, but it would take a really tortured reading of that law to believe that you'd have the legal right to open a dispensary. Yes, there's the question about caregivers. Caregivers can grow 15 plants. And there is the question about, you know, how many patients can one caregiver serve? What they've been trying to do here in Spokane is to play that little game like that was originally played in Colorado where, hey, I'm a caregiver for 2,000 people. I'm a caregiver for 2,000 people, and I'm giving them care by opening up a shop where I sell marijuana over the counter. That's their interpretation of caregiving. And, you know, they're really pushing the envelope here, and when you do that, you're taking a risk. You're taking a risk that you're going to get busted. You're taking a risk that the interpretation isn't going to go your way. Now, you know, good for them for pushing the envelope, but also understand the risk that they're taking. They've got to take responsibility for that risk. So far, the only states that actually have dispensary systems written into their law are some of the later states like New Mexico, Rhode Island. Maine has recently added dispensaries to their law as well. And the medical marijuana bills that are coming out lately all have these regulated systems. Most of them have these regulated systems for dispensaries. Unfortunately, all the states that already have medical marijuana are in this gray area where they've been operating dispensaries and they've been trying to do it by getting around some loopholes. There's a couple operating here in Oregon. There's a place called the Human Collective have here in Oregon that's operating as a pseudo dispensary, and they're getting away with that by using the Oregon laws clauses about reimbursing caregivers for supplies. And it's you know, it's also a little shady here about, you know, how much are you reimbursing them for, because you cannot reimburse them for labor. The solution to all of this, of course, is in the short term to pass laws in Washington, in Oregon, in these other states that mandate dispensaries and they regulate these dispensaries. Here in Oregon, we've got Measure 74 on the ballot coming out this November that would create a dispensary system. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, John Sajo, one of the chief petitioners of that Measure 74, will be on the show, recorded from last week's Normal National Conference. We've also got Chris Conrad recorded from the Normal National Conference regarding Prop 19. And that's the long-term solution. The long-term solution to distribution of cannabis for medical patients is legalization of cannabis for all adults.
Las Vegas, Nevada was the site of several medical marijuana dispensary raids last week conducted by the Drug Enforcement Administration. At least five businesses were reportedly raided and patient and financial records were seized, but no arrests were made, and at least one of the owners whose businesses was raided said the agents left behind all of their medical marijuana. The federal raids come after about a year ago, October of 2009, when the Justice Department directive issued U.S. attorneys to deprioritize enforcement against medical marijuana patients and providers. The DEA is currently being directed by Bush-appointed Michelle Leonhardt, who served as deputy director under DEA Administrator Karen Tandy. Now, both were responsible for more than 200 federal raids in California and other medical marijuana states during the Bush administration. These current raids are coming 2 months after another round of federal raids in July against state-compliant patients in California and Michigan. That month, Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman stated publicly on local television that allowing dispensaries was, quote, a very legitimate goal, and that if doctors say that a patient that it does a patient some good and gives relief to somebody that has a dire need for it, I'm all for it, unquote. Now, Nevada failed to consider the issue of distribution at the time of adopting its medical marijuana law back in the year 2000. Mayor Goodman holds a casual Coffee with the Mayor event on Fridays so residents can talk to him about local concerns. This morning, he was asked about how patients should be able to get their prescribed medical marijuana, and then repeatedly asked about the raids conducted by federal agents this week. The mayor admitted that he doesn't really know the federal and state laws concerning Nevada's medical marijuana. But when asked how he feels about the issue of medical marijuana, he responded, quote, anything, not just medical marijuana, anything that helps a sick person or someone in pain to have the pain alleviated and it isn't hurting somebody else, to me, that only makes sense. We only go around once, life is short, so why let people suffer when there's a remedy, unquote. The mayor has asked his staff to do some research for him and set up a meeting with federal and state representatives. He didn't like the force that was used in last week's raid, so if nothing else, he says he wants to make sure that something is done about that. Now, a quick side note about our current head of the DEA, Michelle Leonhardt. President Obama nominated her to the head of the DEA under his Justice Department back in February, but her Senate confirmation has yet to be scheduled.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Leonhardt was the acting administrator who said of the Mexican violence that it was a sign of success. It showed how we got their backs against the wall. We're cracking down on those drug traffickers, so that's why they're killing a whole bunch more civilians and cops. Yeah, sign of success, kind of like Dick Cheney's last throes of the insurgency, if you ask me. This Las Vegas situation, another one of these situations where a state doesn't have a regulated supply system and people are trying to bend the rules to create one. And again, this goes to that Holder memo. We talked about this an hour or two yesterday, how what's happening here is Holder and Obama, the Justice Department, are continuing the DEA raids on medical marijuana patients. What's happening, though, is unlike the Bush administration, they're not publicizing them. Yeah, that's it. They promise to not raid the states, but instead what they're doing is they're continuing the raids. They're just not bragging about it. They're not issuing press releases, and they're not. And in many cases, they're having the courts seal the records of the raids in order to keep it under the radar. And the raids themselves are ridiculous. I've got it posted up at our blog, stash.normal.org. There's actual security cam video of these body-armored, automatic weapon-wearing, goggle-clad, you know, bodysuit cops, DEA cops, coming into this store, this empty store with their guns drawn, you know, like it's a big FBI raid or something, you know, defending themselves against glass countertops and cash registers, I guess. And the owner of the store points out that if the search warrant was really about, you know, medical marijuana and plants and all that, why did they leave the plants? Why did they leave the growing equipment? But they took the PlayStation, they took the Wii, they took the television. It's all a smash and grab. It's all meant to intimidate these business owners to try to put them out of business when they know they can't do it through the courts. Hooray! It's time for a break. 20 after the hour. 4:20 out there on the East Coast. There will not be a second hour today. We're going to take an extended break. We'll be back right after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
All my friends know the low rider.
This is Normal Show Live.
The low rider is a little higher.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today, we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday. Our segment features the best of rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Eric Smokes Bud in Madison, Wisconsin. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Thanks, Dan. It's 22 after the hour, and we bring you some more music from Eric Smokesbud out of Madison, Wisconsin. He brings us some stoner metal from Arlington, Texas. The group is called Can A Bus Dream, and they're known for their high energy and pure metal drive. They were formed in 1999 as a Wednesday night escape for guitarist Ganja Glenn and vocalist Cannabis Chris. Sounds like they're stealing our nicknames here, doesn't it? The two friends shared similar influences ranging from ZZ Top and Kiss to Metallica and Iron Maiden. After learning a few covers, the pair was joined by Danimal Dan on the drums. Later, Billy Brown added his complimentary guitar sound, and the lineup was finally complete with the addition of Joe the Anomaly on bass. The band immediately formed a tight-knit friendship that has held them together through the years. You can find the latest from Can A Bus Dream on Facebook, MySpace, and thestonernation.com, where you can sign up to download this tune. It's Can A Bus Dream and Stoner Nation.
These are the thoughtless, drug-induced voyages of the simple mind. A cosmic adventure to escape our troubled times. The valleys in the sky are only low when you are high. The clouds that we walk on are just dancing in the night. Do you hear the dog meow? Gravity has failed me once again. I'm high. We'll be right back.
That's Stoner Nation from Can a Bus Dream out of Arlington, Texas. Great metal music there, guys. Thanks a lot. Check it out at thestonernation.com.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time to take a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. This weekend, the Boston Freedom Rally at the Boston Common, noon to 6 p.m. Check it out, bostonfreedomrally.com. More information on that. They'll have plenty of great bands. Last year, I got to see Graveyard Barbecue, great band out there, and I'm sure they'll have plenty of others. So please check it out. MassCan Normal puts this on noon to 6 at the Boston Common. I also believe that we've got a hemp festival going on at high noon. The Jack Herer Memorial Hemp Fest in Kansas City is taking place this weekend as well. Jack Herer passed away this year, and in the tradition of hemp festivals in Kansas City, we're going to have a hemp festival to honor his memory. So check that out in Kansas City, Missouri this weekend. Also coming up, we've got some more information on some Saturday events taking place. The Mark Emery Worldwide Protests are tomorrow. Free Mark Emery worldwide protest taking place in cities all across the globe. For more information on that, go to the web and check out freemark.ca. That's free M-A-R-C. Remember, Mark Emery is with a C. freemark.ca. In other events taking place throughout the Normal Chapter Network, on Saturday, September 18th, there's a Cass County Compassion Club meeting. You can call 269-262-4004 for more information. That's Cass County, Michigan. More information on their Compassion Club available at normal.org/calendar. And of course, the Free Mark Emery Rally, the Denver rally is taking place at the Federal Courthouse at 18th and Champa. There's going to be plenty other rallies. Again, check out freemark.ca. Coming up next week, on Tuesday, there's a weekly medicating event at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. Hemp TV is on the air next Tuesday in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And on Wednesday, the Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is happening as well. If you'd like to get your event listed on our cannabis community calendar, it has to be listed through one of our local Normal chapters. So pester your local Normal chapter to set up their Google calendar, share it with russ@normal.org, and that way I will see the events and be able to bring them to you here on the show. And for more information, email address, names, places, maps, websites, phone numbers, and more, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
NORML stands for Reforming America's Prohibitionist Marijuana Laws, and that cannot happen without directly engaging our government and elected officials. Local NORML chapters and other affiliated activists relentlessly lobby our lawmakers for a change we can believe in and report on their strategies and progress in this segment we call Our Government at Work.
Welcome back. 32 after the hour, government at work. We're going to take a look at the West Coast and what's happening with legislation. This is audio that we bring you from the Normal National Conference last Thursday and a panel that was convened called Pot Politics 2010 and Beyond. And the two big items on the ballot coming up this November are right out here on the West Coast. Of course, California is voting on Prop 19, an initiative to legalize the possession and cultivation of marijuana in small personal amounts. We'll bring you some of that with Chris Conrad here after our first interview, which is with John Sajo. He is the co-chief petitioner of Measure 74 here in Oregon. This is a measure that would legalize a regulated dispensary system, a regulated supply system for the state of Oregon that would provide for providers and dispensaries to help Oregon's medical marijuana patients. We turn now to John Sajo.
I first smoked pot 45 years ago when I was a freshman at Georgetown Law School in Washington, D.C., and I've been a regular smoker ever since. There is nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. It was 40 years ago next month that Normal was formed, and at the time, and so we've been at this now for four decades, and our position then and our position now is there's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults, and it should be of no interest or concern to the government. They have no business knowing whether we smoke or why we smoke. As Alan mentioned in his opening comments, we really are at a tipping point in this country. There are more living Americans who have smoked marijuana than living Americans who have not. And with the increasing support we have from the public now, we've made more political progress in the last 5 years than in the first 35. So, folks, we are very close to winning this, closer than it looks like when you're out struggling on the street level, I understand. But once change begins, it happens more quickly than you anticipate. Now, I want to introduce you now to some of the people who are responsible for the progress we're making. I don't for a moment suggest that these are the only important projects around the country, because frankly, there are so many of those we couldn't possibly have everyone represented on a panel, or we wouldn't have time during the three-day weekend. But this is a fair sample, I think, of the very good, positive, progressive work that's going on this issue. The first person I'd like to introduce is, because we're here in his home state, John Sajo is the executive director of a group called Voter Power. They are the primary sponsor of Initiative 74, I believe it is that right, John, 74, in Oregon, which would create a state-licensed dispensary system where right now in Oregon, as he'll explain, I'm sure, they have medical marijuana, and you can share it among your friends and give it away, but nobody is legally allowed to sell it. Well, with some luck in November, that's going to change. Please welcome John Sajo.
Thanks, Keith, and welcome all you Normal attendees. If there's any of you that are my age or a little older, you might remember the last time Normal had the annual conference in Portland was 1986. And back then, we also had a measure on the ballot to legalize personal use of marijuana. I was the main person on that, and we've come a long way. That year, we got 26.3% yes vote, and it was a real sobering lesson. And so it's exciting to be with you all here now when we are on the verge of not only being on the ballot, but winning the election. So this is an exciting time. I assume you're all here because you love marijuana and you would like to legalize it. Good. Well, let me tell you, you know, when I started out as a young activist many decades ago, I looked at it and, you know, tried to figure out, well, how do we do that? You know, is it going to be, do we go to our legislatures? Do we go to Congress? Do we, you know, bring court cases where the laws are thrown out? And I quickly realized that the way we're going to legalize marijuana is using the initiative process. And that has been how most of the major gains have happened. That's how we got, you know, Prop 215 in California brought us the first medical marijuana law. Now we have 14 states plus D.C., and most of them came with initiatives. So We need to embrace the initiative process. The people are far ahead of the politicians on this issue, and that's how we're going to legalize marijuana. And this is an exciting year. I'm not 100% sure, but I think we have marijuana on the ballot in four states, and I think that's the most we've ever had on in one time. So that's another measure of progress. Now, I'm just going to try to share some things I've learned over the years about using the initiative process and what we need to know about it. First off, it costs a lot of money. And up until recently, most of the initiatives were not funded by us. They weren't funded by, you know, a grassroots movement. They were funded by a small number of big funders, Peter Lewis, Soros, and Sperling. And thank God for those, really wise, rich men. But it's time for this movement to move past that funding source. And frankly, we're having to do it whether we like it or not. We got on the ballot by doing it ourselves. And we did get a grant from MPP and a grant from DPA. But in this initiative that we just put on the ballot, we raised the lion's share of the money from small contributions and a few benefactors. And one of my messages is that if we want to legalize marijuana, we're going to have to pay for it, and it's not going to be cheap. And I'm hoping that we can go away from this conference with everybody realizing that we have the power, just those of us at this conference, to do this, but we need to shift our spending a little bit, and we need to all make sure we spend as much on legalization as we spend, for example, at the Governor Hotel. And if we do that, we'll be pretty close to legalizing marijuana. So anyway, part of my pitch to you all is we need your help. You know, one of the things that's going on with this initiative is we barely got on the ballot, we're nearly broke, and we're in a very, very difficult, tough campaign. We think we can win, and there's lots of evidence that shows we can, but we need you to help us raise some money. So we're having an after party tonight at the Modish building, which is about three blocks from here. We're passing out flyers, so come on down, and, you know, we'll be continuing the conference after it stops here and have speakers and things you can bid on and all that usual stuff. But anyway, we need your help, so please step up. Now, what does our initiative do? Our initiative, you know, we've had the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act for 12 years, and it's a great law. It has stopped patients from being arrested for using their medicine. What it hasn't done is created a system where all patients get medicine and they get it conveniently. We now have over 45,000 patients in Oregon. I don't know if that's the highest per capita among the states, but it's right up there. But we have a system that requires these people to produce their own medicine, and it's a felony for anybody to sell it to them. And we've been struggling with that for 12 years, making the best of it, and we do pretty good. You know, there's a lot of organizations that try to help patients, but it just doesn't work. You know, there's no question that requiring patients to produce their own medicine keeps medical marijuana, in the dark ages. And we look forward to a future where patients can grow it themselves if they want, but where they can go buy it and where they can buy advanced products that research and development and innovators like some of you out there are going to come up with. And that's going to be a better world, and we're going to make it happen November 2nd. There's some really exciting aspects of this campaign. Now, we've done a lot of polling, and, you know, one of the things I got to say is that part of politics is our issue, but a bigger part of politics is realizing that we're a little issue in a big sea. And right now, one of the things we're up against is the decline of the Democratic Party in the national sphere, and the Republicans are highly motivated. They're out for blood, and they're all going to be voting. We polled on our issue in right after the November 2008 election, and we were polling at 59-32. We polled in June, and we're only ahead 46-41. And it's not because people have changed their attitudes about medical marijuana. It's because young Democrats are not planning on voting. And so one lesson there is the key to us winning this election, and I imagine it's the key to Prop 19 winning in California, is we have to mobilize the young voters. We have to register them, and we have to get out the vote. So we're directing a lot of effort in our campaign at that. We have petitioners out collecting emails and registering voters. We just collected emails from about 5,000 people at the state fair, and now we have an email list approaching 20,000. 10,000, and we're gonna keep building on that to where we can send out emails and remind people to vote. In Oregon, we are lucky because we have only vote by mail. We don't go to the polls at all, so we have about a 2-week window where people have their ballots, and we're gonna spend a lot of our resources on getting people that we know are supporters out to vote. And if we do that, that will easily overcome the fact that we're not over 50% in our polling numbers. There's been another test of this campaign as well. Last month, a new part of the initiative process here in Oregon was called the Citizens Initiative Review, where another nonprofit organization partnering with the state government selected 24 voters at random to demographically match the state of Oregon. And those folks studied this initiative for a solid week. We had many hours of testimony. They had expert witnesses. We brought out all kinds of people. We brought Mary Lynn Mathry from Patients Out of Time and Mike Kravitz from Veterans for Access to Medical Marijuana. We brought Don Duncan from ASA. You know, the other side, they talked to Andrea Barthwell. They talked to, Chris's police chief, who said all kinds of terrible things about dispensaries in California. But at the end of that process, where these 24 average citizens got to really get into the trenches and study the details of the initiative, we won 13-11. And the lesson for that is that we can win, but it's going to be very close. And that's really what we're up against in this race. And we're putting the best campaign forward we can. We got some good things going for us. Oregon has a voter's pamphlet that you can buy pro and con arguments in. It gets mailed to every household. We have an outstanding lineup in our voter's pamphlet. We have 11 arguments in, including one from Tom Potter, the former mayor and police chief of Portland, Betty Roberts, former justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, Christine Olson, former U.S. attorney for Oregon. So our goal was to have some law enforcement people on our side, and I think we did pretty good there. We have 8 other arguments from doctors and patients. The other side has only 2, one from Citizens Against Legalizing Marijuana and another from the cops. So I think we're going to win in that arena. That's going to be very influential. We hope to raise a significant amount of money over the next 2 months and use it to get out the vote on the one hand, and also to put out our message that a regulated system will work better than what we have now and will make sure all patients get the medicine they need. And, wish us luck. Do what you can to help. I think we're going to win this election in November. Thank you very much.
That's John Sajo from Voter Power. He is the co-chief petitioner of Measure 74, the regulated medical marijuana supply system we're voting on here in Oregon in November. He was followed up by Chris Conrad. He's the court-certified expert and one of the publishers of the West Coast Leaf, court-certified expert in cultivation and author of many books on marijuana and medical marijuana. He got up at the panel to talk about California's Prop 19.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And bear in mind that that's our former police chief that you heard taking that position, by the way, John. And so, it's great to be here today. It's a really exciting time, and I'm very optimistic about Prop 19 passing right now. Let me start off by saying what the state of California law is to give you a grasp of where things stand right now. Basically, marijuana is illegal in California. There is a qualified, limited immunity that people have if they get a doctor's approval, and that is an immunity that allows them theoretically to have 8 ounces or 6 plants and be immune from arrest if they have the right paperwork. Otherwise, they're in court fighting it out. And a lot of times the problem is the paperwork. The cop doesn't like the doctor, doesn't believe it's undone in time and so forth. Whatever their issues are that they have against the paperwork becomes a big factor in this whole thing. But SB 4, Prop 215 created the limited qualified immunity. SB 420 created an opportunity for collectives to grow, and it also set up the safe harbor for use. But basically, it created a legal defense against sales of marijuana, which right now we have this dispensary system in California, which is not based upon them saying it's legal to sell marijuana. It's to say that if you get it busted, that you have a legal defense in court for marijuana. Meanwhile, it is a felony to furnish people below the age of 18 in California. It's a misdemeanor to possess marijuana, to transport marijuana. It is a felony to cultivate marijuana. That felony can be mitigated by a PC-1000 deferred entry of judgment, which means that if the judge is nice to you, that you might be able to get out of there without having a permanently scarred record other than having been arrested, because they can dispose of the PC, of your cultivation bust. As was mentioned earlier here, something like 56% of Californians think marijuana should be legal. When you look at the polling, what we have right now, the average of the last seven polls comes to 51.3% who are in favor of the initiative as written. So what this means is that our opponents are now in the position where they will say that they're not in favor of the drug war, they're not in favor of marijuana being illegal, they just think this is the wrong initiative. And then they will give you two reasons of why they think it is wrong or more. I mean, they have, you know, they can make up fake stuff as much as they want, obviously. So I'm going to pass on that for a moment and get back to that in a minute, because what I want to go to next is how do we arrive at Prop 19 in the form that is written right now. The origins and concept come from the fact that there were four initiatives that were being crafted in California last year. One of them was the California Cannabis Initiative, which was a full legalization initiative. The other was the California Hemp and Health Initiative, Jack Harris Initiative. The other one was called the Common Sense Initiative. A couple guys in Long Beach who just said it's time to do something, and they didn't know, they didn't have a group, they didn't have anything, they just wrote something and said, it's common sense to legalize marijuana, so therefore we should do it. Basically, it was their initiative. And then we had Proposition 19. Now, as you notice, only one of those is called Proposition. That's because of the four, one made it onto the ballot. My wife, Mickey Norris, here, who's a co-publisher of the West Coast Leaf with me, she and I were engaged in the writing of three of those initiatives. And what we people said to us, well, which one do you support? And what we said is, we support the one that gets on the ballot. Because the other ones, you know, they're great ideas, maybe, but they're not on the ballot. And so it seems pretty clear to me how you have to address that kind of a situation. However, not everyone felt about it that way. I'm here to tell you that this initiative was very, 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 very carefully written. It was initiated from material that was put together by criminal lawyers. Then it went to constitutional lawyers. Then it went to election lawyers. There was a group of citizens, such as myself and Mickey, and many of the leaders of the movement were invited to participate, and they said they did not want to because they felt this was the wrong year, and if they held off for 2 years, then they would get involved, but they wouldn't get involved. Now, we took the different approach. We said, if there's something on the ballot, I want to have something to input on what it's like. And so then a lot of people are resentful to us because of, well, how come we were consulted and they weren't? And the answer is because we took the time and went to the meetings and they didn't. That's what happened there. And so those meetings were extremely interesting because this initiative was designed to do several things. One is to preserve the existing medical marijuana laws. The attorneys had told us originally, as long as you don't mention, yeah. So they said as long as we didn't mention the medical marijuana laws, that they were automatically preserved. And as long as we didn't put them in the section that says these are the laws that are changed, it would not be changed. But we said that's not enough. We put in the purposes three times that it protects the medical marijuana laws in California. And in the ballot argument, it says one time that we're preserving those laws. So the idea that it's changing those is completely wrong. It was written to protect the medical marijuana laws and, in fact, to go beyond it, because the current medical marijuana laws do not make it clear that you can sell medical marijuana, whereas Prop 19 says you can sell marijuana if the city authorizes it. And so the question of the dispensaries will be resolved clearly that you can sell marijuana in California for medical uses after Prop 19 passes, which is not clear right now. It's still being fought out in courts. The other thing is that it says a modest goal. Rather than legalizing unlimited amounts of marijuana for anybody to use all the time in any place and share with anybody of any age, they wrote something that said it limits to 1 ounce. And you have an affirmative defense if you have more than an ounce, and the legislature can increase the quantity that is available, and the legislature can continue to make further changes to improve the initiative by reducing penalties and reducing restrictions, but not by going the other way, not by adding new penalties. It doesn't give them that authority. It doesn't give – and it also makes a very small personal grow legal. What that means changed during the course of our discussion. Originally, it was a reasonable amount. Then it became maybe 100 square feet. Then it went down to 50 square feet. Then it went down to 32 square feet. And what we found out is that the people who don't grow marijuana think that that is a lot of marijuana. And so Richard came to the 25 square feet, and the legislature can increase that. initially I was very against that, but I think that with the affirmative defense that you can defend bigger gardens. And so that's not really going to be a problem. That just means that if you can stay within 25 square feet, you don't get arrested. And the other thing is that it allows local regulations without putting in a state law that regulates the sales of marijuana. This is what our constitutional lawyers told us we had to do. They said if we made a law that California had to break federal law, that would be ruled unconstitutional immediately. What we can do is say that the state is stepping aside and it's going to allow the cities to do the same kind of regulation that they do over the gas station, the barber shop, the grocery store, the drug store, the liquor store, the tobacco outlets, the same kind of regulation. And of course, that offended a lot of people because they felt like marijuana is not supposed to be regulated. It's supposed to be something different. But our sense of what we got to through the polls was this, that the voters were in favor of legalization, but they don't like the alcohol model because they think it's not controlled well enough. They wanted more controls over marijuana than over alcohol. And we might say, well, marijuana is safer, but that's not what the voters want to hear. They want to hear that we have written a law that produces more controls. And so those controls were put in there specifically to do a couple of things. One of them being that it would, make 18 to 20 years old sales or transfers to people between the ages of 18 to 21. We kept all the criminal penalties for sales to minors below 18 and 14. Those remained intact, same as they always have been. There's no new felony in this at all. But what it did do is it made it tougher penalty for selling to people between the ages of 18 and 21. Made it equivalent to the alcohol model. And it said that we have to keep it away from kids. And it did it in kind of an ambiguous way. It said it doesn't legalize smoking around people, around minors. So it didn't make a new penalty. It didn't change the law about it. It said that it didn't specifically make it legal to do that. And so we basically, so you still have your misdemeanor, furnishing charge, and for the medical, it's still protected, but if you're distributing to people under the age of between 18 and 21, you might actually have the possibility of prison time. It's not a guaranteed prison time. Excuse me, jail time. There is no prison time. I said that completely wrong. This is only jail. It does not create any prison time at all. And the other thing that people were concerned about, let me reiterate that, no prison time. Because I know that's going to come back and haunt me, the fact that I said the wrong word. That's the way that it works in this movement. Okay, so and the financial argument resonates very well, although people don't really expect it to pay off the way it sounds like it will because they remember the lottery and it didn't pay off the way they thought it was going to. The drug cartel argument is extremely powerful because the fact that 60% of the drug cartels in Mexico's money, and I know the word cartel is being abused here, but I'm just going to go with the common usage. The drug cartels in Mexico get about 60% of money from selling marijuana, that if we take the California market away from them, that's going to reduce their ability to slaughter people in Mexico. And to do that kind of criminality that's going on down there. And people are really concerned about that. The other two things that are really important to California is that they don't want people driving under the influence and they don't want people in the workplace smoking pot. And so what we did is in initiative, it protects the employer's right to say what people can do on the job. It protects the federal drug-free workplace laws, which, by the way, we can't change federal law anyway, as you know. And then it also makes sure that the driving under the influence laws are intact. So it preserves those because, again, you can argue that people make drive safer on marijuana than other things, but voters don't want to hear that. They want to hear that people are not going to be driving under the influence of marijuana any more than they used to. So that's where the way the law is written, based upon polls. What we were looking for is the middle ground, in other words. And so we're getting hit from both ends, and so let's talk about that for the next moment here, which is that we got the backlash we were expecting from the right wing, which is that they say, well, this is creating a crazy situation and so forth, and marijuana is this great danger, and people begin driving under the influence, and people are going to be smoking at work. And we had dealt with all that within the initiative itself, so most of their claims don't have a lot of traction if you actually read the initiative, only if you don't read the initiative. Now, what we were not necessarily expecting was that Dennis Perrone and another group, a woman called Dragon Fart or something like that, is out there making up false stories about the initiative and spreading it around. We were not really counting on that because we were hoping for this, what we call, we're doing 51.3% with the what they call the likely voters. But we want the unlikely voters out there, too, the young people who aren't expected to vote. And we think it's going to be important for the Democrats and for the progressive agenda in general to have this happen as well. And so Anyway, so just to basically say it, you know, there are no new felonies. It doesn't do basically anything that they say. And so in the new issue of the West Coast Leaf, we did an investigation of the claims that were made by those people. You can't go on forever, though, because they can make up conspiracy stories like you wouldn't believe. And you can spend your whole life trying to dispute their conspiracy theories. But we looked at the things that they said were likely, and we found out that basically it was all wrong what they had to say. So then the historical context is that this has been that this is 38 years since California had legalizing non-medical marijuana on the ballot. Coincidentally or inextricably, it's the same ballot number, Proposition 19. And right now, the big funders have not come through with the money for it, so we need to count upon people like John Setford here. You know, if you could take 1 month's supply of money that you spend on marijuana and give a third of it to normal, a third of it to Prop 19, and a third to Prop 74, that would be an extremely good use of your money. And in addition to that, I would say that you have the information here to donate to the campaign, and also the West Coast Leaf gives you a full rundown on how these things look and all these arguments. And I think that Prop 215 is the best thing that happened to California since I've been alive. And if Prop 19 passes, it is going to far, far surpass anything that Proposition 215 did. And so we need every one of you out there telling people in California, register, vote, get people to vote absentee, get them out to vote, but we have to have them, and we need to win on November the 2nd. So please, thank you for your time, and get everybody out on behalf of legalizing marijuana. It makes it lawful, not just a legal defense. This law says it is lawful for people to possess, cultivate, and use marijuana. And that is the difference, because that's the beginning of the end of discrimination, which is all based upon it being illegal. Thank you very much.
That's Chris Conrad from the West Coast Leaf defending California's Prop 19. Speaking of Prop 19, was just looking in here in the chat room. Folks were pointing out that Tommy Chong has got some questions about Prop 19. We're going to have to do some education here, Tommy. He's seen one of those silly videos that's out there right now where people are making up all sorts of things about Prop 19 that just aren't true. So we'll make sure that he gets the right information. Also, you can check out my word-for-word analysis of Prop 19. It's up at the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. There's a big Prop 19 button right there on the right side of the screen. You can go and read it for yourself. Don't believe the hype for some of these anti-Prop 19 people. Chris Conrad is absolutely right. This legalizes marijuana. It makes marijuana legal. That's the important part of this, is that we are no longer going to be criminalized for what we're doing with cannabis, as long as we're responsible adults. And Rome wasn't built in a day. I know we'd all like to have the perfect legalization bill and have it just, you know, absolutely free and release all the pot prisoners and all of that. I'm all for that. But we're not going to go from absolutely illegal to absolutely legal in the span of one election cycle. This may take a generation for all of us to get this spread across the nation and to get it to the level of legalization we all prefer. But we cannot get there without taking the first step. It's a lot easier to fix a law that's already in place than it is to start from scratch and build a brand new law and a brand new initiative. Prop 19's on the ballot now. You can either vote for it or you can vote against it and ally yourself with Carmen Trutanich, Steve Cooley, and Bonnie Dumanis. If you want to vote with the cops, if you want to vote with the prohibitionists, then you go right ahead and vote no on Prop 19. I'm voting yes. It's time to be legal.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Thanks for joining us here on Normal Show Live. We'll be back next week. There will be no Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio today. I just don't have enough staff. I got to get some rest. So until next time, until Monday, take care of each other, Tokers.